Abbey 104.
Well, hello, good morning. It's Abbey 104 and it's Sunday morning at 11:05. My name is Terry Bennett and it's Folk Tales. And it's a very special version of Folk Tales today because I have two guests in the studio, one of whom has already been here, and that's Anne Horrocks. Good morning, Anne.
Good morning, Terry.
And I've also got Zana Paskovic. Have I got the pronunciation right,
yes,
Zana?
Yes, you're right.
Now, both of you are involved in the Chernobyl Children's Lifeline project. Anne is the chair of the local group. And Zana, you are accompanying the 12 children who have come across from Belarus, are currently here on a four-week break.
Yes, that's true. Yeah.
And you are a national of Belarus, and you are a teacher.
I'm an English teacher from Belarus, yes.
And I have to say, your English is absolutely impeccable.
Thank you.
So we have no problems conducting this interview, but let's just go and have a think about what exactly the Chernobyl Children Lifeline is. And Anne, I think you're best placed to answer that. What is the charity all about?
Well, it's about giving a recuperative holiday to children who live in areas that have been affected by the Chernobyl nuclear disaster back in April 1986. Children living there today still suffer from the consequences of the radiation fallout in that country. Belarus took 70% of the fallout of radiation, and although you can't see it, you can't smell it, it's in everything they eat, in everything they breathe, and in the food they eat. You know, the contamination will continue for another 600 years. So the children's immune systems are badly compromised, although when you look at them, they look healthy. Internally, they are not.
And tell us about the charity. It's been going some years now, hasn't it?
Yes, Viktor Mitzi was the original person who set the charity up. He went to Belarus and he was shocked by the health problems that children and adults face in that country. And so he set up with people in his village a visit of several children to stay locally. And from that, they formed a link. And from that one link, many other links have grown across the country. So each link fundraises each year to bring children over, and the 4 weeks recuperative holiday we know gives their immune systems a huge boost and can completely eradicate the radiation that's in their bodies. So from that one visit by Viktor in the early 90s, a charity, a national charity, has grown up, which is the head office is in Olten and is actually now managed by one of the first original boys to come here. Viktor brought him over. It's Denis, and I can't pronounce his surname. You'll have to ask Zana.
Denis Vystavkin.
Vystavkin.
Vystavkin, yes, that's right.
Thank you. So Denis now heads the charity and continues in Viktor's work to bring more children over and to develop the links and support them.
And this has grown, obviously, since that time,
yes,
to the extent where there are now a number of groups in all over the UK, I think.
Yes, there's about 60 links now, and always we're looking for areas where there isn't a link that we can perhaps develop and set up a new link. So if any of your listeners are in one of those areas and are interested, then please, you know, let us know.
Well, we'll certainly talk a little more later about how people can get involved and how people can help you. But it's grown, as I say, from nothing to this organisation where you've now got 60-odd links across the country. Tell us about the Sherborne and Yeovil one. How long has that been running?
Well, I keep saying 17 years, but that's probably, I've been saying that for about four more now. So I would say in excess of 20 years it's been going. I've only personally been involved for about 7 years. But it's been in this area. It was just the Sherborne link, but then it extended to Yeovil because, you know, recruiting host families, which is a vital part of what we have to do. We can fundraise all year, but without host families, we can't bring the children. And so now we have families from as well, Rhyme Intrinsica, as far as Stoke Trista in Wincanton. So we're quite a wide geographical area.
Okay.
But yes.
And I'd like to talk more about that as well, in terms of how you go about recruiting the families and what actually their role is in the project. But we'll come on to that. Let's have some music to start with, shall we? And you've chosen a couple of pieces, Anne, and Zana's also chosen a piece, which I'm going to struggle to pronounce, but we'll get there somehow. I'm going to have a go. I am. But it's not the first piece. The first piece I can pronounce, this is Human by The Killers.
I did my best to notice when the call came down the line. Up to the platform of surrender, I was brought, but I was kind. And sometimes I get nervous when I see an open door. Close your eyes, clear your heart. Cut the cord. Are we human? Or are we dancer? My sign is vital. My hands are cold. And I'm on my knees looking for the answer. Are we human? Or are we dancer?
That was The Killers and Human from 2008, chosen by my guest in the studio this morning, who is Anne Horrocks. Oh, I've got two guests, actually, Anne and also Zana, who are both here to talk about the Chernobyl Children's Lifeline project. And we've established that it's been going for a while in the UK, and the local branch here is also dates back for a few years. Your involvement, you say, is from about 7 years ago.
Yes, I think it was about 7 years ago when I first hosted.
How did you get into it? What made you want to become involved with it?
Many, many years ago, probably over 20, I saw an advert in a fish and chip shop about it, and it must have just sat on the back burner in my head. And then I'd finished work about a year, and I was reading the Western Gazette, and I saw an advert there for host families, and I thought, oh, I'll give it a go. This will be interesting. I hosted a child who only got one meal a day and was taking food up and hiding it in her bedroom because her situation at home was so poor. From that, I then hosted the following year and subsequently found myself becoming involved on the committee and taking on the chair's role.
It's quite a big thing, isn't it, to invite a child from a foreign country, any foreign country, into your home. It's a child you've never met before.
Yes.
They don't speak your language. They don't speak English.
No.
Is that not a fairly daunting prospect?
I think one of the things that most host families worry about most is how will I communicate? But we say use the Google app. Better than Google Translate, but the Google app is excellent at translating. We're very lucky that we have a host family this year who speak Russian, but Jana and all the other leaders we've had here, they are available 24/7. They have a mobile phone that we provide, and host families, I say you can phone any time of the day or night. It can only seem a little thing to you, but to a child it may be a big thing, and let's deal with it straight away. And with an interpreter who can translate and explain, it's very easy to solve problems that could otherwise escalate. But I love mime. You know, I use mime to make what I want to convey very clear, and you can have fun. You know, you can just say to the boys, you can sort of close your lips and make a zip sign with your finger and go, shh. And they, oh, right, we best be quiet.
There are certain things which transcend the language barrier, aren't
there? Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely.
Zana, you don't have that problem because you are very fluent in English as well as Russian, and I have much respect for you for that because I speak no Russian at all. Tell me just a little bit about you. You're a teacher back in Belarus.
Yes, I'm an English teacher at grammar school. I have been teaching for 25 years already. Yes, I studied at this school and I'm working there now, and I enjoy what I'm doing. I love children. I love to teach them. I love to be friends with them. You know, it's my hobby, I would say, at the same time as my job, you know. And I like to be with children all the time.
And you've got your own children as well.
Yes, yes. I have two grown-up daughters already. One is a student at the university, and my elder daughter is working already.
Tell us a little bit about life in Stolin, isn't it?
The
town where
these children
are. Yes,
Stolin is a little town which is situated in the south of Belarus, just on the border with Ukraine. The population is about 10 million people. 10,000, sorry. The population of the country is 10 million people, 10,000 people, yes. And the children who come are from Stolin and from the villages which are in Stolin area. I could say that Stolin area is probably the largest district in our country and the most populated.
Most of the people listening to this won't have been to Russia, let alone Belarus or Stolin or anywhere like that. What is life significantly different over there than it would be living in the UK?
No, it's not different, I would say. It's, the scenery is the same, you know, just our country is very beautiful country. Mm-hmm. We have countryside is fantastic. It's very green, lots of lakes, meadows, fields, rivers, you know, but it's flat. We are a landlocked country. We don't have any sea. When children see it for the first time, they say, oh, wow, it's amazing, you know. Yeah, but I can't say that it's different.
And what about occupations of the children's parents? Typically, what would they do for work?
You know, Belarus is mostly agricultural country. And in the area where we live, most parents of these children are just unemployed, you know, because they don't have a lot of job. We don't have a lot of jobs available in our area. And most of them, they just work hard in their gardens. They have big gardens, and they work hard growing vegetables and fruits and sell them to try to get some money.
I see. So it's a fairly frugal existence, and they haven't got much money.
Yes. Children who come over here are mostly from needy families, from poor families.
Mm-hmm. And tell me about your involvement with this project. How did you start to get involved with Chernobyl Children's Lifeline?
Oh, it was a long time ago. I have been involved with this charity for 21 years already, yes.
Wow.
First, it was in 1998. I went to Liverpool. I was just offered an educational department to go with children as a group leader and interpreter. And it was my first experience. It was not easy. I would say yes, because it was hard, yes, because it was the first time. But after that, I've been to many parts of the country. I've been to Scotland many times. I've been to some places in England as well. And it's getting easier and easier because you're getting more experienced.
So this came along as an opportunity then, did it?
Yes.
Just, would you like to do this? And you said yes.
Yes.
But clearly the one thing you need to be able to do is to speak fluent English, which you do. What's your background in that? Do you learn English as a language at school?
I learned English at school, obviously, yes. And I also learned English at the university. I was qualified as an English teacher at the university, yes.
Okay, so yeah. That's not
5 years at university and of course, lots of practice here,
yes,
in your country.
Absolutely. But this it's no small undertaking, is it? Because you come across here for 4 weeks at a time with 12 children. Who are
sometimes
your,
more.
Sometimes more, yes.
Yeah, sometimes.
Who are your sole responsibility. It's quite a big deal, isn't it?
Yes, it is. You know, it's a great responsibility. Yes, I'm responsible for these children because their parents trust me, their children, you know, and I have to be aware of them all the time, you know. Yeah, but we are going well.
It doesn't seem to faze you. You seem to be very relaxed about it. Tell me how they...
It doesn't frighten me at all.
Tell me how you go about selecting the children that come across, because I guess that a lot of children are needy and would benefit from this, and certainly from the health point of view, they would probably all benefit
from
it.
Yes, yes. About 500,000 children still live in contaminated area. And of course, it's impossible to bring them all, you know, but if these are children, they're just lucky children. They are chosen at schools, you know, they must be from needy families. It should be their first trip with the charity. Just luck, I think.
So they get nominated by their school, do they?
Yes, mm. Yes, by their schools, yes.
And somebody goes through the process and whittles it down to...
Yes, some of them have big families, you know, some of them are from single-parent families, but all of them are from needy, poor families.
Mm. Yeah, I think also some of them may have had a bereavement in the family.
I see.
Lost a parent. Two of our boys have lost fathers, one only a year ago, one probably six years ago.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
It must be a very difficult process, I would think, for those that have to make that selection, because they're going to be overwhelmed with children that could come. All right, let's have your second record, shall we, Anne? This is another one of yours. This is George Ezra and Budapest. Any particular reason for this?
I just like George Ezra, and I've just been to Budapest.
Well, that's as good a reason as any, isn't it? Here we go.
My house in Budapest, my hidden treasure chest, golden grand piano, my beauty focused EOU. Ooh, you, ooh, I'd leave it all. My acres of a land I've achieved. It may be hard for you to stop and believe, but for you, ooh, you, ooh, I'd leave it all. Oh, for you, ooh, you, ooh, I'd leave it all. Give me one good reason why I should never make a change. Baby, if you owe me, then all of this will go away. My many artifacts, the list goes on. If you just say the words, I'll up and run. Oh, to you, ooh, you, ooh, I'd leave it all.
over you. Ooh, ooh, I'd leave it all. Give me one good reason why I should never make a change. Baby, if you want me, then all of this will go away. Give me one good reason why I should never make a change. Baby, if you want me, then all of this will go away. My friends and family, they don't understand. They fear they'll lose so much if you take my hand. But for you, ooh, you, ooh, I'd lose it all. Ooh, for you, ooh, you, ooh, I'd lose it all. Give me one good reason why I should never make a change. My hidden treasure chest, golden grand piano, my beautiful Castillo, you, ooh, you, ooh, I'd leave it all. Ooh, for you, ooh, you, ooh, I'd leave it all.
George Ezra and Budapest, chosen by Anne Horrocks, my guest in the studio, along with, I get her name right, Zana Peskovic, and they are both here talking about the Chernobyl Children's Lifeline. Zana, we were just talking earlier about how you select the children that come across, and obviously there's a large pool of children that would benefit from it. But just tell me a little bit about the health effects. The disaster was in 1986. It's worth saying that the distance between the Chernobyl nuclear plant and Stolin is only about 245 kilometres as the crow flies, which is quite close, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Very close. Yeah.
What, in the immediate after effects, was the town evacuated or did people just stay there?
No, people from our area were not evacuated, but there were a lot of places in our country where people were evacuated from. They were closer to the to Chernobyl. Yes, it was in Gomel area. It's a big city. And they were thinking about evacuating people from this big city. The population is about 1 million people, yes, but they couldn't do it. Our people were not evacuated, but I remember the time because I was born in this area and I was 13 years old when it happened. And I clearly remember many families just moved to different parts. Who could do it? You know, they moved to maybe their relatives, to their friends, to other parts of Belarus, which were less contaminated, or even to Russia, and they stay there now. And but a lot of people just couldn't do it. I remember that those days, you know, I just remember a few days after when it happened, it started raining, and the rain was white. I don't remember. We didn't understand why it was white, you know, but it's probably something was in the air and was falling down on the on the ground on us. Yes, and it was everything was white. The trees, the grass was white, you know, and this was the worst thing. And unfortunately, people didn't know about it. Nobody told us that it was a very terrible disaster happened, you know. And probably it influenced a lot on people's health because next generations suffer even more. Because as for me, I was only 13 years old and now I have children, my own children, and I hope I will have grandchildren. And unfortunately, this radiation affects not only our generation and next generations as well. And what about diseases? Of course, we have lots of diseases. Our children have very weak immune system. You know, they have lots of problems. Of course, cancer is the problem number one with children and adults as well. And I remember last year we had a boy who just jumped over and broke his heel. It's just because our children have very weak bones, you know, and it's very easy to break. Unfortunately, yes, we have lots of problems with health.
And it's notable that we're now 33 years on from that.
33, yeah.
And, you know, the children of today that you've brought across were born in maybe 2009 or thereabouts, but it's still sufficiently radioactive there that they still suffer the effects. It's not just their parents.
Yes, it's not just their parents, because they still are in, they live in contaminated areas. They have contaminated food. They drink contaminated water. You know, they still in contaminated environment, and this is the worst thing.
And that affects their, as you say, their immune systems and their bone density and all of those sorts
and
of
yes,
things.
Yes. And we have lots of problems with eyes, teeth. You know, we have some tests at school for children, and every year we have more and more children who suffer from different kinds of diseases.
What is the healthcare regime like in Belarus? Is it adequate?
It's not too bad, but the problem is that we don't have enough doctors. You know, we still have a lot of doctors, but not enough, and especially in the villages. And also equipment, medical equipment is not good enough to make this all these tests. This is a problem, because if you diagnose a disease earlier, it would be much better to treat. But if it's late, it's late.
Sure.
You can't do anything with it, unfortunately.
Sure. Now, part of the process that goes on over here, and I'll bring Anne back in here, is to get the children to see a dentist and an optician, because this is presumably something that they don't get at home, is it, John?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, because they can visit a dentist, but they should pay. Mm. And these children are from poor families, and they just can't afford to do it.
No. Tell me about that, Anne. Is it reasonably easy to get people to see the children when they come across?
Sometimes we struggle. We've been very fortunate in the last few years that Simon Frakovich at Robert Frith has seen the children and tested their eyesight, and usually ends up finding two children who need glasses. One year it was a boy who was wearing his father's glasses because he couldn't afford, his family couldn't afford to buy him glasses at home. So we're very grateful to Simon for the care he offers. And this year, again, he's found two children. Dentists, we struggle with. And this year, unfortunately, we've not been able to find a dentist to see them. One of our host families was able to manage to take their two boys to their own personal dentist, who very kindly saw the two of them. And one of those two boys has 8 teeth that need to be extracted.
Nine.
Well, I think so. 8 are baby teeth.
Yes, and
one is an adult teeth and tooth, and he's already lost an adult tooth. And unfortunately, the dentist tried to get him into the hospital to have them extracted, but it can't be fitted in the time we're here. So if any of your listeners are dentists and can offer care, even if perhaps 2 or 3 can go to one dentist and 2 or 3 to another, we'd be extremely grateful.
Well, let's hope there is somebody listening who can maybe help with that, because, I mean, the cause is obviously hugely worthwhile, and it would be great if we can get as many of them seen by a dentist as possible. They're still here for another 2 weeks?
2 weeks, yes.
So there is time to organise that.
Yes, there is.
And going back to healthcare over there, they can see a doctor occasionally.
Yes, they can see a doctor. Yeah. Yes.
But then, leading on from that, if they're diagnosed with something that needs treating, what's the follow-up like?
If they need any treatment, of course they can go to bigger places, to bigger hospitals, you know. Mm. But it's also not easy because they're overfull. You know, there's so many people who need treatment in the country, you know, and sometimes they just can't get it.
Look, we'll come back and talk some more about that. We're going to go for your piece now. And I'm going to try and pronounce it.
I can help you.
Yeah, well, no doubt of that. Belaviska Pusha.
Pusha, yes, you're right. Belaverskaya Pusha.
Okay, tell us a little bit about the piece, because that's not too apparent. Not many people will know it, I don't think.
Yeah, it's a very famous Belarusian song. And this song is about the largest reserved forest in Europe. And it's like a symbol of our country.
Okay, just to add colour to that, the park you're talking about is a national park. It's a part of a UNESCO World Heritage Site.
Yes, you're right.
And it's also got a large population of bison, I believe. So this is free-roaming bison.
Yes, yes, free-roaming bison. Yes, you can see them in this park. Yes.
Okay, let's have the piece.
They're huge.
I'll try and pronounce it again afterwards, but let's have it first anyway.
Заповедная даль, свет хрустальной зари, свет над миром встающий. Мне понятна твоя вековая печаль. Беловежская пуща, Беловежская пуща, мне понятна твоя вековая печаль. Беловежская пуща, Беловежская пуща, здесь забытый давно наш родительский кров. И услышав порой голос предков зовущий, серой птицей лесной из далеких веков, я к тебе прилетаю, Беловежская пуща, серой птицей лесной из далеких веков, я к тебе прилетаю, Беловежская пуща. Пробираюсь к ручью, где трава высока, там, где заросли гуще. Как олени с колен пью святую твою родниковую правду, Беловежская пуща. Как олени с колен пью святую правду, Беловежская пуща. У высоких берез свое сердце согрев, унесу я с собой в утешение живущим твой заветный напев, чудотворный напев. Беловежская пуща, Беловежская пуща, твой заветный напев, чудотворный напев, Беловежская пуща, Беловежская пуща. Заветный напев, чудотворный напев, Беловежская пуща, Беловежская пуща.
Lovely. Now I'm going to try and pronounce that again with help from Jana. Belavizhskaya Pusha.
Yes, that's right. And thank you very much, Terry, for this song. And it reminds me my Belarus, my friends, my family, and I would like to speak to my family in Russian.
Yes, of course.
Мои дорогие любимые дочки, муж, друзья, все, кто меня слышит и кто меня знает, я передаю вам большой привет. Я вас очень люблю, я по вас скучаю и надеюсь на скорую встречу.
Lovely. That was just saying hello to your family.
Yes,
at home.
Yes.
Yeah. And we should say the artist there, Piesniary?
Yes, you're right. Right. Yes, okay. It's a famous Belarusian band, Piesniary.
Right. Okay. Well, we got through that. Happily, there's no other Russian pieces for me to pronounce before the end. Anyway, let's get back into discussing what we were. Now, the children, when they come over here, and you, obviously, it's not just the dentist and the optician, we've talked about that, and it's a wonderful opportunity to get away from the contamination that they have at home. But how do you organise a programme of events for them? What do they do?
Well, we take them out Monday to Friday so that we can have host families who work. And we take them from at 9 o'clock. We pick them up in Sherborne at Castle Gardens, who very kindly let us have that as a meet-up area and a drop-off. We then take them to places like the beach because they've never seen the sea before. So, you know, it's so special to see them go to the seaside for the first time. I went last year with Jana and she lined them all up in a row like they were about to run a marathon, all like this. You can't see how I'm doing it, but, you know, ready to steady, go. And they ran to see who could get their feet in the sea first. And they were just so excited. So we try and take them to the beach once a week. We're very fortunate this year, and the Geranium Trust has allowed us to go to their premises. So there, it's ideal. They've got lots of outside areas that they can play in, but they've also got the barn where they can be indoors if it's raining, like it was one day last week. We take them to farms like Gore Farm. I shouldn't be mentioning people because I'm so worried I'm going to miss somebody out.
That's okay.
But we take them to see, they're going to Castle Kerry to see the alpacas. They go swimming every week. We're very lucky that a swimming pool in Yeovil and the boys' school in Sherborne let us use their pools. So
you've got plenty of choice of
plenty
things
of choice,
for them
plenty
to do.
Of choice. But we try and keep them very local most of the time because travelling, lots of them aren't used to travelling. They may not have a car in their family. Travelling is very tiring, not just for them, but for the interpreter. So we try and stay local. And just get them outdoors in the fresh air as much as possible.
And you don't have any trouble finding enough places for them to go then? You've got plenty of choice.
Right. No, we're very lucky. And I'd like to say thank you to everyone who has provided an opportunity to entertain them.
And Zana, I know you were going to pick up on that.
Yes, and I would like to say a lot of thank you to everybody who involved with this charity, with CCLL, Chernobyl Children Lifeline, for such a wonderful opportunity for these children to come over and to improve their health, which is the most important thing, but also to meet such wonderful people, to visit your country. You know, the children are coming back with lots of happy memories and they will remember this visit forever, believe me.
I was going to ask you, more than just the effects of being in a non-contaminated environment for a little while, what they get from the experience, because these are children who are typically 9, 10, 11 years old.
Yes.
The first time they've been away from home.
Yes.
First time they've been
yes,
abroad.
The first time, yes. The first time they've been abroad. They've been far away from their parents, you know. And, you know, they learn how to socialize with other people. They see how other people live. They learn other cultures, you know, and of course they learn good manners as well. They try to be well behaved, you know. They're well behaved, yeah, but they try to be better, you know. It's the most important thing, not only to improve their health but also to learn them how to socialize with other people.
Do you have any issues of homesickness or anything, any reluctance
no,
on the
No,
sort of
it
thing?
Happens, but very, very rarely, believe me, yes. This year we haven't had any homesickness at all. Yeah, I'm not surprised, but sometimes it happens, only for the first few days. but
and
not
they,
often.
They can speak to their parents on the telephone, presumably.
Yes, of course. Not very often. Not very often. It's not just it's just because not to be homesick, you know. Because when they speak to their parents, it can make them homesick, and we prefer not to let them speak so often.
Mm. And very often, the host families will have children of their own. How does that work? Because they can't communicate properly.
Yes, they can't communicate. You know, children don't really need any language, you know. They have their own children language, and it's international language of games, and, you know, they play together, and they get on very well.
Well, I have to declare an interest here, because I've met all of these children and accompanied them on a couple of days, and I have to say they are the most delightful children that you could wish to meet. They have a huge respect and fondness for you, clearly, and they are the most impeccably behaved children as well, and incredibly easy to amuse. Let's put a for instance there. We were at the Geranium Trust, which Anne has mentioned, on Friday. It was raining.
Yes, and we were inside all the time.
So we were inside for about 5 hours, and there wasn't a peep out of them. They just got on with amusing themselves, playing games.
Yes, they played board games, you know, they just sit and chat, you know, with each other. You know, they're not spoiled children at all.
Well, life at home, I mean, a lot of children in this country have access to computer games and to various gadgets, Xboxes and PlayStations and all of that sort of thing. Is that as common in Belarus?
No, it's not very common. Of course, they have access to some mobile phones and computer games, but not as much as your children can have. And these children are not cannot be given the things that your children can be given here, you know. Their parents just can't afford to give them everything that they want, you know. They know a lot of things, you know, but they just can't get them.
So that perhaps promotes more self-sufficiency in being able to amuse themselves.
Yes, yes.
And what sort of other activities would they get involved in at home? Do they undertake sport or youth clubs and that sort of thing?
Yes, yes. Some children does music, you know, they play musical instruments. In our group, we have a girl, she plays 4 or 5 musical instruments. Her mom is a music teacher. Yes, and she can play very well, yes. And also they do sports, yes. Maybe they don't have a lot of activities because most of them they have at school, extra class activities after school, because their parents can't afford to take them to other places, you know, and to give them a chance to do something like swimming pool. In our area, there is the only one swimming pool. You know, and when parents don't have cars, they just can't take them to the pool when they live far away.
Right, let's take another record and we'll come back and talk about what people can do practically to help in this country and a bit about the future for the project. This is What a Wonderful World by Louis Armstrong, which you've chosen, Anne.
Tell us. Lovely piece.
Just another favourite.
Yes, okay. Definitely.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue, clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They're like much more. And I never knew, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
The great Louis Armstrong and What a Wonderful World, of recording from 1967, chosen by Anne Horrocks, who is here with Zana Piskovic. Am I getting that right so far?
You're right, yeah, absolutely good, right. Good.
And we're talking about the children's, Chernobyl Children's Lifeline. And this visit is about halfway through now.
Yes.
So I'm guessing that it won't be too long after this visit ends before you start planning next year's event.
Oh, it'll start immediately after the children go back.
And let's just talk a little about how people can assist with that. I guess there's always fundraising because you need money to bring these children across.
Yes, we do. It costs about £550 to bring each child for the flight and for the visa. And we also have to include the leader. We start fundraising immediately, but we're always also looking for people who will organise fundraising events for us and do it totally independently and then send us the money to the link. And we're always very grateful for any amount, no matter how small, because it all adds up. We need host families, because as our host families get older and maybe start taking on the care of their own grandchildren, they may drop out. And so we need new people to come. It can be anybody. It can be young people. It can be older people. It can be grandparents. You know, it doesn't matter.
I'm going to ask you what the perfect host family is. Is it a younger couple with children of their own?
It can be anybody. Anybody who's got the time, the interest, and wants to help a child or two. We prefer to put two children together because it makes it easier, especially if a host family hasn't got children of their own. You don't feel that you have to be entertaining them all the time. But lots of our host families have got their own children, so one child is absolutely fine because, like Jana explained, there's no language barrier between children. You know, you give boys a football and they will play football no matter what their language ability is. So anybody, we're constantly looking for new host families, people who can't host. We need drivers for the minibus. We need escorts to go out and support Jana, because if some children need to go to the toilet and the others want to stay on the beach or doing whatever they're doing, they have to be escorted. They can't go on their own. We're just looking for anybody who wants to offer any of their skills, or not necessarily skills, just their time to support us. We've actually got an event coming up on the 29th, which, if people are interested and they've got the time to come along, one of our host families has a musical interest, and he's arranged...
I've got the details. Oh,
yes.
The Quicksilver Mail.
Yes,
in Noble, isn't
please
it?
Read it out.
On Monday the 29th at 7:30, it's a free acoustic musical evening. I'm not quite sure what that comprises, but it's open to all, and children are welcome.
Yes,
and
yes.
Like you say, this will be in favour of the Lifeline.
Yes, because you can come along, you can meet some of the children who will be there, you can meet some of the host families, you can meet some of the committee. I'll be there, Jana will be there, and you can come along just for an evening out and entertainment, or you can come along and ask us questions and find out more.
Yeah, well, an ideal opportunity then, really.
Yes, I hope so.
And heading for the future, you obviously try and do this again next year. Is there an ambition? Could you bring more children? There's 12 in the current batch.
We could if we have the host families and if we have the funds and if we have a minibus. We're very lucky at the moment. One of our driver's daughter's school near Woking lends us a minibus. If anybody in this area were willing to also lend us an additional minibus and we have the funds and the host families, yes, of course, we'd bring more than 12. But at the moment, that's the capacity due to the minibus being a 16-seater and having to take Jana and escorts.
And Jana, from your point of view, What's the future look like? Are you happy doing this? Do you want to come again next year?
Yes, I'm happy if I'm invited.
That's putting her on the spot. Does she want to come back?
No, with pleasure, I will come back.
Have your recent visits been mainly to the Sherborne-on-Yeovil area, or have you been elsewhere?
No, this is the second time when I'm in this area. Yeah, I've been to many other places in the country, as I have already
Do you have
said.
Any say in that, or do you just get allocated an area?
Just allocated an area.
She's invited. Yeah, because we are invited.
I don't select.
No, I see.
I don't choose. I am selected.
Yes.
We are able to name the leader we want.
Are you?
Yes, right. we can now. Well, we never used to be, but no, so we put in a request. We want Jeanna back. Oh,
yeah, I was going to say, you could tell me off air whether you're going to invite Jeanna again. I think we will. I've seen her in action.
No, she's very good. Jeanna is wonderful with the children. She never takes her eyes off them, you know, which is really important, especially when we're near water. And we always put two escorts on when we're near water. Mm-hmm. But no.
Yeah, yeah. I want them to be safe and healthy. And I want them to come back to their parents safe, healthy and happy.
Yeah. Well, only I think two out of the 12 could swim, but the others now with the swimming we're taking them on, some are almost there.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They love it, don't they?
They love the water. In the pool.
We'll conclude with your final piece, which is "Make You Feel My Love" by Adele. Just a nice piece to go out on, isn't it?
It's a beautiful piece.
And thank you both for coming in and talking about it. I have to say, it's one of the most worthwhile projects. And if you meet the children, they will absolutely melt your heart. They are delightful children. And it's fabulous work you're doing with them.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, and thank you, Terry, for inviting us along today.
Thank you.
To make you feel my love.